You are listening to The Dystopian Republic, and I, Raul Guerrero, am your host. We begin today's story on the morning of October 10th, 1998. Catalina VI listened to tunes that had more soul on a finger than he had in his whole body while getting dressed in his home's bedroom. Eating syrup, doused chicken and waffles, he waited for his phone to ring and Candida to tell all about last night, growing worried when that call never came. Catalina tried calling her from her home, and after four tones, Habsburgo VII answered and told him to never dial his number again, then rudely hung up. That erased all the excitement he had for the day ahead, giving Regulo a call shaken by vibrating nerves. Catalino had him call Candida's home and ask Habsburgo where the hell Candida was, because they knew she calls at least one of her friends every morning. Jacinda butted into the call and said that her daughter had disowned her for that Dina B-word, leaving her own family with broken hearts that may stay as such in perpetuity. Regulo asked her what she meant by that, upsetting Habsburgo into telling him what he told Catalino to never do again. Over the phone, he told Lisandro what was said to him, suspecting that Candida may have had something done to her by her parents. Yamile called the Brumel home and her phone told her to leave a message, as the number she dialed was temporarily unavailable, alarming her into giving Regulo a call as her throat trembled. Walking toward the bus stop, Varinia expected to see her friends there, but didn't foresee their crew being without Candida, nor what remained of it looking like hell. Not one word needed to be uttered for her to know that her day was about to take a turn for the worse. Catalino informed Varinia that Candida had gone missing, shocking her into asking him and her other friends if they called her home. Lisandro said he, Yamile, and Regulo have not only tried getting in touch with Habsburgo and Jacinda, they've also dialed up the phone number shared by Dina, Windsor, Eileen, Keller, Norwood, and Blythe. Varinia told him to let her guess that her friends from Rusalka didn't answer on nerves that couldn't keep still for a second. She asked Catalino, Yamile, Regulo, and Lisandro if they've told the police about Candida being gone, telling them not to tell her that they believe the Andrade-fueled trash about those Rossers being dukes of a corrupt rule. Varinia didn't mean to say that like it mattered to her anymore, now that those six scums have left her life and those of her friends. In any case, she was willing to go along with anything her friends propose in their effort to get Candida back, thinking what the F she got herself into when Catalino insisted that they all skip school and find her themselves. When Yamile, Regulo, and Lisandro volunteered to help in the search, Varinia felt obliged to do the same, dreading what that party will uncover. Catalino asked himself where he'd be if he was Candida and came up with the address of the home where the Rusalka Six lived, having his friends follow him away from the bus stop and into his seven-seat SUV. Varinia noticed that no one else was waiting for the bus, recalling the crowds she'd see do that daily and how not uncommon it was for kids to stand on the street. Making that same observation, Lisandro gave thought to whether he should have seen the Rusalka Sixes longing to relive the days when the Yellow Cross ruled as a red flag. He reflected on his picture with Norwood, thinking of how similar the look on his face was to the one Gregorio Jr. would often make during rallies. Lisandro told himself that Candida's absence was from a night of partying with the six from Rusalka, as unlikely as that was. That less than dignified explanation was pure compared to the more probable one, which originated from a conversation he overheard some kids have at school. During the drive to Rusalka, Catalino and the four with him heard on the radio that Sinclair's approval rating had fallen to 28%. That didn't surprise Yamile or Regulo, given all that's been going on, starting with the rumbles of the first school day since 1984 and everything else that followed. Lisandro suggested that Sinclair step down and let real nationalists take the wheel, intending to express that at the ballot box. The radio stated that many pundits expect next month's midterms to be very unkind to the United Bromelian appeal and quite good for the Bromelian People's Party. Hoping that prediction would come true, Verinia called it a much-deserved humbling for Sinclair, whom she viewed as a high-brow lecher who sure loves the small and powerless. Catalino noticed that the curvy sports car behind him had been following him closely for the last 17 miles. He saw the heavy traffic ahead as his chance to lose the three sunglassed men in the other vehicle, but that wound up not being necessary. The sports car sharply pulled over to the road's right shoulder, but not before its occupants had memorized the SUV's license plate number as well as what it looked like. Its backseat passenger used a built-in phone to report a stolen vehicle exiting into Rusalka from the North Sur Del Bru interchange. Catalino pulled up to the house shared by the Rusalka 6, stepping out with Yamile, Regulo, Lisandro, and Verinia. He rang the doorbell and pounded the door as the other four stood around him like a shield ready to defend to the death, their unease spiking when no one answered. The five tried peeking through the front windows, finding that the inside was unviewable thanks to six layers of silky black drapes. Catalino told Windsor that he's at the door. Then Yamile, Regulo, Lisandro, and Verinia identified themselves to Eileen, Keller, Norwood, and Blythe, but even that was met with silence. Meanwhile, La Gran Lanuda's provincial police at or near Rusalka were on the hunt for the stolen vehicle reported, running the license plates of every SUV that matched the description given. Catalino told Dina that he and the other four just want to pick up Candida so that the Mironbury 6 can be whole. He reminded her that his mate can't be away from her clique for too long, or certain things will pierce through like a sun's shine beaming through a dark cloud. And to his appall, that reminder failed to provoke a response. About to have his friends help him break inside, Catalino saw the envelopes jammed in the mailbox like trash in a full wastebasket. Yamile took one of the pieces of mail out, sloppily opened it, and found a letter appreciating Dina's business with regard to a self-storage garage in Birchdale, La Gran Lanuda, she started renting out the other day. This substantiated her belief that Candida was being held in the rented space and hope that she's alive and not harmed nor about to be. Yamile then fell in a hands-over-mouth revulsion that couldn't believe the Rusalka 6 would do something so horrible. Regulo wrapped his right arm around her neck and rested his head against hers, assuring her that she's not alone in being appalled at what their so-called friends did. Lisandro maintained his cool, but Verinia's pity leaked out, upsetting Catalino into telling the other four to quit sorrowing and get into his SUV. That was the stern yet emotive tell that got the five speeding for the storage place, peeling the suspect license plate off like an old sticker and revealing one with a very different letter number combo. Halfway between Rusalka and Myronbury, Birchdale was run down and struggling to climb out of its blighted rest. Catalino arrived at the address on the letter, an old storage facility that's been decaying one paint chip at a time. He didn't let the expansive flowery birch trees that were Birchdale's only highlight distract him from unlocking the gate. Catalino led the way to the left row's centermost storage unit, aching and paining Regulo with a feeling that their trip and entry was too easy. Lisandro found it odd that Dina of all people would rent out such a decrepit space, thinking it was a departure from a woman who was once among the Yellow Cross elite. Verinia looked around for any approaching dangers and breathed with a timid grin when none could be heard, seen, or even felt. Catalino tried to unlock the storage unit with the key he used to enter the facility and was pleasantly surprised when it opened just as easily. The first thing he and the other five saw was a heavy curtain blocking whatever was inside from being immediately visible. It wasn't a sight that Regulo liked at all, and in fact, he was an impulse away from telling the other four to turn away while their hearts were still beating. With one stomping kick, Catalino ripped the curtain off its hinges, revealing walls painted in oily black that stunk of an obscenely powerful petroleum. Gripping their noses and mouths to minimize their exposure to the paint, the five found Candida lying on the floor as if she was dead. Catalino fell, cried, and grabbed his sternum as if it was about to burst in two, seeing his world dim to a black as horrid as the paint coloring the room. Regulo's legs shook until his knees hit the floor and poured out his tingling grief. Yamile bawled her eyes out and screamed for Candida to forgive her, and Lisandro reduced his woe to a shaky frown. Verinia said Candida, with a voice weaker than a feather, crawled to her, touched her left cheek, and gasped when she felt plastic and ink. She hastily made the body's face look at hers and was stunned to find that it was a mannequin, looking back at Catalino, Regulo, Yamile, Lisandro, and Verinia before showing them that find. The grief that drowned the five soared to a surface where the purest of surprise and insult mixed into an anger that was just as unadulterated. Verinia shook the mannequin like she was trying to strangle it, but halted when she heard a metal lid clank in its belly. She got the body almost standing and repeated that shake to make sure there was something metallic in there, making Lisandro have her step aside so that he could access that object. A slight, sick feeling had bothered Regulo since the curtain was kicked off, but now it's churning his stomach and up to his throat. Yamile felt her head lighten as fumes from the paint put her brain on a high that pushed her body to go to sleep. Catalino forced his mind not to focus on his headache, urge to throw up, or increasingly unsteady posture, but the smell was too potent to ignore, tucking him into an unwanted slumber. Verenia started feeling sleepy herself, and that came with a want to vomit that she easily fought off, even as it kept coming back. Lisandro cut the mannequin's torso open with an electric box cutter, finding a squircle metal sheet made of melted can lids. He yelled out a breath that shot his full English breakfast from his stomach up his esophagus into his uvula, surprising him into gripping his mouth in time to keep that meal down. Lisandro grabbed the sheet, turned it over, was mystified to find it still blank, coughed out vomit, and gradually collapsed onto said matter. The five had fallen asleep without factually knowing where Candida was, what was being done to her, who her abductors were, why she was taken away, how that abduction was done, and when it happened. They slowly awakened when the frogs' ribbits and crickets' chirps reached their peak volume, bringing with them a weighty mugginess. Regulo, Catalino, Yamile, Lisandro, and Verenia got up in that order and were nonplussed to find themselves standing on a clean lot of brown soil in a jungle's vibrant open dome. Movement from nearby spooked the five into pointing their backs at each other the way children would in a haunted forest. They whispered out or thought of every swear word that existed, knowing that jungles like the one they're at were home to all sorts of dangerous animals. Right away, Lisandro reached for his cutter and found that he no longer had it, leaking out a fear the other four never thought they'd see. Whatever was moving near them barged into the lot and turned out to be Candida, looking like she did the previous night to her friends' incredulity. Catalino was over two moons at how sound his mate appeared, a salubrious sight for a heart caffeinated and hardened by stressed dread. Sharing in that hormonal flush, Yamile and Verenia wanted to run and give Candida an impassioned hug, but Regulo and Lisandro suggested that they not by hindering their steps forward. Catalino told his mate that he's unable to make sentences out of how alleviating it was to see her alive and very well. Candida got more than a load of her friends' gladness for them to be five again, asking if they really went so far for the sole purpose of finding her. Catalino wondered what about that she was so taken aback by and wished he never let her leave with the Rusalka Six by herself, because their lives would have gone on as normal had he simply said no. Candida told him that he wouldn't have, said they knew what Dina and her crew were capable of, and thanked him for not intervening. That was met with a unison what that Catalino followed by asking her how she could sincerely say that, and if she and Dina did it under the mall and planned to do some more in Rusalka. Candida stomped up to and told him to mind his own s as she slapped his mouth of its taste, making Yamile shriek and Verenia gasp. Regulo asked what the slap was for, and Lisandro wondered if she had gone insane, both taking a few steps toward her before Catalino jumped to his feet, told them to stand down, and that it was okay. Candida smiled and chuckled over how her mate understands her as Yamile was frozen by what just occurred and Varinia sensed something ugly coming. Regulo asked Catalino if he was seriously going to turn the other cheek as Lisandro clenched his fist over some movement he barely heard due to it being far away. Candida didn't like how her friends made what happened to her out to be the trauma of her lifetime, calling it a catalyst to her epiphany, if anything. Catalino's lower jaw hit the lot the way a bowling ball would hit the ground, asking her what the six effing did to her. Candida answered that Dina, Windsor, Eileen, Keller, Norwood, and Blythe did not compared to the Honorable S who put her on the right path. In a heartbeat, masked people in trim but brawny militant attire burst onto the lot and pointed their guns at Catalino, Yamile, Regulo, Lisandro, and Varinia, screaming for said five not to move or else. A chuckling welcome to the start of Epiphany made it clear whose influence Candida was under. Elliot Serrano, the S in the Alas. Even the strongest words couldn't describe how terrified Yamile was to have one of Catalpa's cleansers feed from her, recognizing him as a wanted war criminal as well. Elliot reckoned that Candida's friends recall him looking more royal than he does at present, but said he'll reobtain that regality soon. He'd like to spend hours explaining his master plan, but felt that it'll all make sense as time goes by, but for now, his little demonstration must begin. That struck Candida like she's known what that meant for years, frowning at her friends as if they were bitter foes. Asked by Regulo what he meant by demonstration, Elliot said that his body hungered for a little exercise, as did those of his employees. He wanted Candida's friends to run and pray that no one gets them, giving them 3 minutes he counted down from. That got Catalino sprinting forthwith, and while Regulo and Yamile hesitated for 4 to 5 seconds, they ran as well, but Lisandro refused and preferred to fight Elliot head-on, pushing Varinia to say that she too will stay and vowed to return Candida to Maronbury. The countdown progressed slower than most due to one man's desire to have 5 people run, but it became clear to him that only 3 would. Elliot recommended that Lisandro and Varinia rethink their defiance and run while they still had time to, repeating that after his counts of 4, 3, 2, and 1. He told those two that they've cursed themselves to a danger that's unlikely to leave their lines of sight and can now only not be got. Lisandro had no intention of running, and neither did Varinia, amusing Elliot into yelling out a 0 that scared away birds with its boom. Yamile was 3/10 of a mile from where her run began when she unintentionally kicked off her ballet flats, stumbling but telling herself that she'll never stop or even slow. But after hearing Lisandro and Varinia scream, she tripped and hit the ground, rolling like a barrel to an aghast, untidy kneel. Yamile then heard Catalino yell for anyone, anywhere to help him, concluded that he's been got too, and feared that she and Regulo were next. That's when she saw a masked man in all black point at her, and a crowd dressed in like manner join him in the distance. What really scared Yamile was how in kind the people chasing her were, acting as though they were an army of robots built to serve Elliot. In Bromelia, the phrase in kind was also used in reference to people, places, or things that talk, act, or look in conformity to someone, someplace, or something. Yamile hastily got up, staggered her first three steps, and ran like her life depended on it when Elliot's cronies charged like provoked lions. 4 decameters ahead, increasing fatigue slowed Regulo's sprint down to a jog that was barely able to go above a walking speed. It exhausted the fuel in his run and left his tank with concentrated fumes, dropping him on all fours, palms and knees first, forehead and hair second. Regulo whimpered, knew that he's about to know what being in Elliot's custody was like, and told his friends how sorry he was for being unable to go on. He spent the next minute regaining and stabilizing his breathing and braced himself to be got, and all he heard was the jungle letting its wildlife be known. The life all around him brightened his hopelessness to a belief that he could still get away, leaping to his feet and running as if his body had regained its stamina. While the pursuers sent by Elliot had yet to see Regulo, they never lost sight of Yamile for more than a few seconds. Catalino resisted from where he was captured to the lot, being forced to kneel before and look up at Candida, whose ruthless resolve cracked a tad. Yamile realized that it didn't matter how fast she ran because Elliot's cronies will always be close. Deciding to find a place to hide in and remain there until her pursuers move on, God willing. Wanted by Catalino to tell why, Candida admitted to doing it with Dina and disowning her family, saying that should answer his question. She gazed at her clothes, said that the Myronbury life was nice and all, but believed that the time had come for an upgrade that crossed its yellow. Candida assured Catalino that she wasn't through with their city and was intent on returning, but with a righteous mission in mind, one of love for country. Regulo's run hovered betwixt that and a sprint until he bolted out of the jungle as if he had charged through a plaster wall. He collapsed to his knees, smiled at the nice road 7 feet away from him, looked up, and saw a peeling, overarching sign that welcomed travelers to Slough Isle. Regulo limped into town and was dismayed to see nothing but abandoned and boarded up buildings, telling himself that he's not in a ghost town. He saw 3 preteens buying colas from an old soda machine in what was a gas station's snack shop, and breathed that sight into his nose and out his mouth. Regulo knew Elliot wouldn't dare show his face anywhere where civilians were at, thanking God for letting him get away. He needed to tell somebody about what happened to him, but didn't know where to go to get help, finding his answer 3/4 of a mile into Slough Isle. In an old cafe that never closes, burger patties cooked on the grill and French fries were submerged in a deep fryer's pool of shortening. Customers were eating their meals and chatting when Regulo shoved the door open, held it, and stood at the doorway, causing everyone to stare at him. A waitress's cringing woe was followed by an ask of what a kid of his status was doing in this town, noticing how out of place he looked. An old man sitting at the counter could tell Regulo wasn't a local and asked if he was from Bromelia City or Delgadopolis. He told him that he was in for a hell of a lesson if his yuppie stuck-up a-hole came to Slough Isle to cause trouble. that reduced Regulo's composure to that of a boy who was mad he didn't get that toy he wanted for his birthday. He asked the old man what the devil made him think that he came to Slough Isle to screw with him and the other fellers in the shack. The waitress told Regulo not to call her store a shack because that implies her business caters to bums, vagrants, and cheats. Her years as an owner were spent ripping away the sticky material that label left behind, blaming her much older brother for smearing that reputation all over their business. Be that as it may, she wanted Regulo to entertain her and her camaraderie by telling them what brought him to the rough, tough, hard-working corner of Bromelia. The waitress owner made it known that the people of Slough Isle have seen and heard just about all and urged him not to hold back. Regulo shakily gulped the drool accumulating in his mouth and said that he and his friends were being chased by Elliot and his robot-like servants. That shut everyone in the cafe up and chilled its atmosphere with a somber that staked the owner and her camaraderie right in their soft spots. Made nervous by the reaction, Regulo asked if the name he brought up was familiar to them, making the old man whisper, say and yell that word. The owner called Elliot the bastard who treasoned his community by nearly wiping it out in the name of pleasing that princess C-word Catalpa. She introduced herself as his sister May and the old man as their stepfather Malcolm, the one who adopted them after their original parents died during the Capitol storm. Regulo was nothing short of flabbergasted at what he was just told, yet it gave him some insight as to the ghoul he and his friends were up against. To his good luck, every patron and their buddy had BS2 most wanted posters of Elliot hungering for its $100,000 reward. Malcolm said that neither he, May, nor anyone else in the cafe will rest until that excuse for a human is caught, hopefully dead or grudgingly alive. Regulo asked the patrons if they're all that remained of Slough Isle and was horror-struck to find out that they were. The lot Candida's friends woke up on was still empty, but the blood splatter was evidence of a horror's beginning but chaste compared to where it continued. Cloaked by serried vegetation, an abandoned mobile home park resisted its accelerating sink into the earth. Leaning on a young palm tree with crossed arms, Elliot stared at the coming dusk and asked Catalpa and the others of the Alas if they're proud of him now. In one of the mobile homes, Candida entered the bathroom to check up on Lisandro and Verinia, who were sitting in the bathtub with untreated ropes tying their arms behind their backs. Regulo was nauseated by the story Slough Isle's residents told about the massacre Elliot led against their people early one morning in November 1986. He knew he was dealing with a monster, but never realized how monstrous that creature really was, falling into a trepidation that believed his friends were dead if he didn't intervene. Lisandro gave Candida four impassioned damn yous, ending his last with an all to hell that called her a rotten B-word. He never thought he'd be emotionally forced to say that to her ever again, and felt lucky to have not had to for all those years. Asked by Verinia what Elliot did to her, Candida answered that he didn't do anything and willingly joined him. Lisandro called those answers heinous lies, betted that it was the potions talking, and said the Brumel he knew wouldn't dare be someone else's pawn. Candida scoffed at him for saying that as if it contained an ounce of truth, repeating Elliot's lack of action and her willingness to join him in case he didn't hear her the first time. As for her being a Brumel, she had two things to show Lisandro and Verinia, unzipping her skirt and pulling it down as well as her pantyhose, but not her thong. Candida showed them butt cheeks that have been hardened and thickened by beating after beating with belts and hold paddles. She called that what Habsburgo considered to be love, and in affection, Jacinda gladly let him inflict, putting her pantyhose and skirt back on. But Candida said that wasn't all and took off her blazer, shirt, and bra to reveal a chest that had callus lathered over it like a lotion as thick as human skin. She asked Lisandro and Verinia if they now understood why she partnered up with Elliot, getting only a silence frosted by watery misery and frigid shock. Putting back on her bra, shirt, and blazer, Candida promised them that De Catalino, Regulo, and Yamile will reunite soon. Regulo called the police, who got BS2 swarming on Slough Isle, and plowing through the forest he sprinted out of with inexorable vigor. He followed the militants from a close but safe distance, watched them break into an old storm cellar, and gasped when a filthy yet unharmed Yamile was pulled out of it. The second she saw Regulo, she ran to him, and the two embraced, cried like children, and let their embrace's warmth salve their spirits. That night, militants zeroed in on the lot and found it deserted, but could tell that it and the mobile home park a mile away had recently seen human activity. That raised Regulo and Yamile's spirits to a height lower than even after they learned that Candida joined Elliot, and speaking of him, BS2 was so hell-bent on getting him that the leadership decided to establish an inescapable perimeter around Humedal Costa Sur. Regulo and Yamile checked into a motel in Primrose Valley, put a sign that told others not to disturb on the room door, kept the lights off, and closed the blinds. They stifled their fear of never seeing Candida, Catalino, Lisandro, and Verinia again with pillows of the militants' assurances that they will see their friends again. That helped them sleep decently and wake up refreshed the next morning and hungry for a hot breakfast in the motel's dining room. Regulo grinned when the other guests looked at and away from him and Yamile without prejudice or resentment, different from how they were initially treated in Slough Isle. The constant police presence he saw pass by or pull over outside the motel made it safe for him and her to go outside for a leisurely walk. Strolling like time did not exist, Regulo's right arm wrapped around Yamile's neck, and she had her left one holding onto his lower back. They loved how, in spite of police being everywhere, Primrose Valley stayed true to its "where peace reigns" unopposed motto. Yamile and Regulo strolled to a playground park 1.5 miles from the motel, sat on a bench, and watched a dozen children play. It walked their minds down a lane built in 1990, starting off heavenly but devolving into an egregiously unjust perdition come 1995. They decided not to dwell on that further to spare themselves of any more heartache, sat up, and continued their stroll until a shopping center caught their attention. Several hours later, an old truck aggressively parked in front of their motel room. May and Malcolm leapt out of it, knocked on the door, and were scared S-less to not see them inside. In Snake Eyes Pizza, Yamile kicked Regulo's butt in air hockey yet again, gloating until he noticed employees and customers gathering around the big screen TV. They joined everyone else as news out of Loretta River broke in about a shooting at Clayene Holtz to the gasping, shrieking, and mouth-covering but slightly numbed shock of most. Regulo wondered if Candida was there with Catalino, Lisandro, and Verinia, shivering at the high likelihood that they're at least involved. He wanted to immediately report them as suspects to the police, but hesitated, fearing what he alleged may end up being wrong. However, something told Yamile that Candida, Catalino, Lisandro, and Verinia weren't where she and Regulo thought they were. The broadcast reported that the identities of the people responsible for the shooting remain unknown, and it's also not known whether any injuries or deaths have occurred. What could be said was that many of Bromelia's elites were at Clayene Holtz, including Rounds the First, Xander Sr., Robbie the Third, and Habsburgo the Sixth. Sinclair wasn't in Loretta River at the time, but was informed of the shooting moments ago and will write a message for all to publicize. His illness made it unwise for him to engage in any public speaking, as that risked inflicting lasting damage to his vocal cords. A loud run inside flinched Regulo and had Yamile look toward the doorway, seeing May and Malcolm panting out a relief that was immensely thankful. That prevented them from watching Malone, Sayada, Sefton, and Eldon Sr. be taken into ambulances, and Joby and Rounds walking a blooded all over Habsburgo into another. The live zoomed in, overhead footage shown broke Clayene Holtz's norm of prohibiting any press anywhere near its grounds, but for today, an exception was made. Malcolm thanked F as loudly as he could that Yamile and Regulo hadn't left town, recommending that they not leave Primrose Valley. May explained how Elliot knew the two lived in Myronbury and that he'll find their addresses and where they attend school if he hadn't already. Malcolm said the people who have Candida, Catalino, Lisandro, and Verinia had watchful eyes spread throughout Humedalcos del Sur. May wasn't sure if one or more of Elliot's servants were listening in on her or her father currently, telling them not to ask either one of them how they knew about all that and to just do what's been recommended. Yamile relented and Regulo did too, but with the asterisk that Malcolm and his daughter were to be relied on for only a limited time. The police presence dominating Primrose Valley had now rode roughshod over Myronbury, but that didn't worry Elliot or Candida. Livingston Sr. watched cops roam through the latter city like hornets on the lookout for attempts to prick their nest from out a window at the mayoral home. Missing posters of Candida, Catalino, Lisandro, and Verinia in hand, he thanked God that Yamile and Regula were found alive and well, and asked that he afford that fortune to the other four. Livingston was ready to fight Elliot, his ilk, their equally vile opposites, plus any other creatures who may want to involve themselves in this situation. Yamile was convinced that staying in Primrose Valley was the right thing to do, but Regulo felt that doing so will do him and her in. And as fate would have it, what transpired since Candida's abduction was just an opener for what will take place beginning moments thereafter. And that was Finding Candida. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the story I just gave. Share this show with everyone you know. Make sure they share it with everyone they know. Check out my website at www.rss.com/podcasts/The Dystopian Republic. Send me your respectful questions and constructive feedback at RaulGuerreroJr95@gmail.com. On that note, I'm Raul Guerrero, and come again for another gripping, thoughtful, and sinister episode of The Dystopian Republic.